publishing industry is going to go through massive change. The vendor market will not exist as it is now. I don't think the level of outsourcing will continue. I knew what to do. It was utterly terrifying. There's only one route to travel, which is everybody has to be a technology company.
Technology moves on fast. There's always a risk you'll be eclipsed. Has that ever been a concern for you?
No, it's a bigger risk not taking the strategic direction to go the right way.
Welcome to the Trends in Academic Publishing podcast, brought to you by Dainta and hosted by me, Patrick Schaeff. My guest this week is Darren Ryan, CEO of Dainta. I started working with Darren about 5 years ago now, I think it was, Darren. And I'm not looking to embarrass you in any way, but I think part of the reason that I wanted to work with you is I saw you as a deep thinker and somebody who's very passionate about what they do, very kind of genuine about trying to make a force for change. And I saw quite quickly that you trusted in people and that you're a real people person. Can I ask before I get into it, is being a manager something that you enjoy doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My first job, real, you know, serious job was the copy editor, which I have to be honest, I fell into. I had no previous interest in publishing. I'd done a social science master's. So that was a good few years ago now, 1997, 1998. And, you know, it was very technical. Actually, we're trained and we were working in HTML tools at the time, DOS-based. That's what attracted me to the process, I suppose. All the rules and regulations, adhering to those. So I kind of put my head down in that work for 6 months. Got really into how the macros worked and how to get consistency across the document. And also, I got pushed once or twice to produce a bit more, which was fun. But after 6 months there, I was actually afforded the opportunity to train 14 new staff. I jumped at it, was absolutely delighted to take on the role as the manager, the team leader at the time, the trainer. So that was amazing after 6 months in the first job, and it was bestowed a lot of responsibility.
What is it that you like about it? Because I must admit, I've had teams in the past and I've had mixed experiences in managing people, but what is it you like about it?
I guess I like to be able to drive my destiny. And one of the things that we use in the company right now is the 7 habits of highly effective people. And that brings all of the people from the position of dependence into what we call interdependence. So I became independent as a copy editor within a 6 month period after doing my job quite competently. But that was all I was going to be able to do without bringing other people on board. So to bring everyone else on board, I had to use the concept of interdependence, which is training them and building up their resources and building more powerful entity. And I was always really attracted by that. And even in school, I was the manager of the mini company. We had a band in school as well. Of course, I was the one who organized everything. It was just something that came natural to me.
Yeah.
And I've really enjoyed it since.
And you mentioned there that you were attracted by rules and regulations. What does that mean exactly?
I'm interested in processes and rules and regulations in relation to trying to achieve certain things. And that was really important part of when I started working as a copy editor. I was very lucky to be trained in the background by a major publisher at the time that was introducing XML into their workflows. And they were amazing in terms of the documentation they would provide. They were very stringent about the rules, house rules, reference rules. And I jumped into that. And what I liked is connecting all the parts together. I was fascinated with the idea that the publication was based on a structure, and that was structure then is reflected in a file, an XML file, and that all of that pulled together, no matter what way you want to do it. And, you know, and that was linked down back to composition or back to an external file. So I was drawn into that then. And obviously back then we were actually asked to develop our own XML tool. Again, I was exposed very early. I worked directly with the development team in the previous organization to develop that XML tool. And we developed it within a year and it became the preferred tool of choice for that publisher. So it was quite fascinating, really.
Yeah, but if you don't mind me saying so, that sounds, it's very nerdy. It's very technical. Mm. And nerds are ruling the universe right now, so that's fantastic. But they don't often make good managers. Do you see a conflict in those two things?
No, I never see myself as that kind of nerdy person at all. Even, 25 years ago, it was clear, reasonably clear to me even then what the publishing industry was trying to achieve in academic publishing. And I suppose I could see that North Star even from that young age. And so to me, it was just about pulling everything together to make that work. So that brought me together to work with the development team in the previous organization. Then I had, you know, and then to work with the team and train them on the tools, develop the tools accordingly. And then I had the privilege of meeting directly with technical teams from those international publishers. We, very early on in that journey, we won another significant contract with a major publisher. And I was asked to travel to spend 3 days with them in the UK on behalf of the organization to demonstrate technology and to present it and work through that that kind of onboarding, which was, again, an amazing privilege from such a, I was only in the company less than 12 months at that point. And so, but I think that driven my journey in publishing and academic publishing over the last year since. And yeah, to this day, really still fascinates me.
So if we can, just started with Dainta. I get asked all the time how to say it properly. What's the, how do you say it properly, Darren?
Yeah, the company name is Dainta. It derives from an Irish word called, which means fully fledged or complete.
Okay, and why did you choose that?
When I was establishing the company, I was just trying to find a good name. I looked at all the usual acronyms and a lot of companies were using them at the time and didn't wash with me. Then I started looking at Latin names, all sorts of different Greek names, all sorts of other facet names. Then I said, hang on a second, first of all, we're an Irish company, why don't we have a look at that? And I actually came across that term fairly quickly, which I wasn't aware of, to be honest. And I really liked it. I thought it really resonated with me. I liked it was nice and firm, strong. I think at that time, we were trying to establish a fully service project management company. And the term resonated because it meant fully fledged and complete. So I think that worked quite well.
Darren, for anybody in the industry who may be listening to this who doesn't know Dainta, can you just give us a very quick overview of who we are and what we do?
Sure. Dainta is a publishing solutions production company. It supports academic publishers, manage their publications from start to finish. So what we do is we receive publications commissioned from publishers and then we deliver their final product and we manage the process in between using our technology and our people. Essentially, we press the buttons and do our magic and then we give it back in nice and clean and shiny, ready for publication. Simple as that.
And you mentioned being an Irish company. I look after sales and marketing for us, but it's we've never really pushed our Irishness too much, I don't think. Is that a deliberate thing in your mind? Do you see the value in being an Irish company?
Yes and no. I deliberately, for example, there was an accent on the word, which I took off deliberately. I didn't want to be seen as an Irish type company, bringing an Irish heritage to it. I guess I was trained to work in the international market from the time I was in my 20s. So I just thought, we're an international company. And obviously when we established a presence in India and China as well, I was very firm about that too, that we're not an Indian company, we're an international company, we work according to the international requirements. So yeah, I'm very proud of being Irish and I'm very proud of our heritage and I'm very proud of a lot of the values and characteristics that we bring to the table as that Irish heritage. I think it really helps, but it's not something that I've actively promoted, I guess.
Yeah, so this is a really crowded space being a academic publishing vendor. And I hate the term vendor, and you're not fond of it either.
No.
It, I think, was probably a term that came into the market once a lot of offshoring and outsourcing happened to the subcontinent. But effectively, the reason I don't like it is it suggests that it's a transactional relationship and that we are a business that sells a service to somebody and that's it. We've seen ourselves more of a partner offering solutions. Mm. Is that the same attitude you feel towards being called vendor?
Yeah, I never liked being called a vendor. When people talk about the vendor market, I always felt they were talking about somebody different. Even though when we were part of it, just that we weren't actually a vendor. Because I always saw ourselves very differently as a partner, because from the very beginning, all our relationships, I saw them as partnerships. And even though they might use the term vendor, it never resonated with me. And I don't believe there will be vendors in the future. I think there'll be only the technological partners who can supplement that technology solution with add-on services.
What made you want to get into it? I mean, I understand that you're excited by the industry, but setting up your own company and getting into that is a whole nother game.
Good question. I got involved in academic publishing. This was early 88. And that stage, the vendor market was based in the US, UK, Ireland. There was a number of suppliers in Ireland as well, supplying into the international academic publishing market. And around about that time, there was some kind of outsourcing done on some technical work to kind of small vendors in India. And I guess I got to see that move from that international mobilization of labor, which was another fascination that I found incredibly interesting. And that move from the position of being in operation where it was just only Irish people there and working on jobs very, very quickly. So actually dramatically, to be quite honest, was moved in a very short period of time, was moved offshore. And I went along with that journey and then the company I worked in before established in operations in India as well. And I helped establish that. But I guess, and that was after 10 years, nearly 12 years in the industry, it really felt like to me around 2008, 2009, that everything was literally a race to the bottom. And I became quite disheartened by it. A lot of companies were closing down in the US particularly, and the UK as well. And even our position at the time was being challenged. And to be honest, I just started looking for a job. I did. I attended interviews with some big players. Like I did a number of rounds of interviews with Google and Microsoft. Those other companies and thought, yeah, I could work quite well in there. But funny, even when I went in and did those interviews, I just couldn't sit right with me. I was in there in the Google buildings and I just didn't feel comfortable. I couldn't even express myself comfortably. What am I doing here? Like, this is not me. This is not who I am. And I understood then, you have moments in your life, I understood then that what I can do is I can build really strong relationships based on trust, delivery, and establish those relationships. And so I'm good at that. So, and I realized then that there's more to be developed by those relationships and by growing those relationships with publishers or with anybody really, than not to be a publisher. But that was what I knew best. So I thought, I know that really well. I'm good at it. Why don't you do something about it? And so I literally left my job and jumped on a plane to London.
And did you, you've got a big family, you don't mind me sharing that. Did you have a big family at the time? Because that's quite a risk setting up your own business.
Yeah, it was massively risky. So at the time I started my own business, we had three children, one due in about a month. Yeah, extension, being built in the house in the middle of winter. We've had another two children since, but yeah, it was absolutely chaotic. And it was the worst time ever to even attempt to do that. But sometimes you need something, you get to the point that you just pivot, you have to change and you have to take on responsibility. I wouldn't like to go back to that. It was utterly terrifying. And I think people think it's, you know, setting up your own businesses, picking up investors and going on these nice shiny meetings and buildings. And it wasn't like that at all.
Because you've been bootstrapped the whole way through. You've never sought investment. You built this business up by the revenue it generates.
And deliberately so. I just put my head down, developed some relationships with publishers, built up a good team around me. It wasn't without its challenges in the early years, to be fairly honest with you. In the early years, it was nothing about technology, really. It was all about the people. It was all about developing the right team and the right attitude and the right experience. You know, I understood how to deal with publishers and how to deal with customers. So I checked every single email for quite a long period of time and built that up and kept that level of trust with our clients. But yeah, we built it slowly. Like we built the relationships it was important to us to retain. I had seen in my previous organization, I had seen the collapse of accounts when relationships were nourished. And so it was a terrible thing never to happen again. So again, we built it up organically. Again, quite challenging.
So can I ask you, would you do it again, knowing what you know? Well, you're 13 years into the business.
Would I start a business again? Yes, of course. Absolutely. But I wouldn't like to go back there now. It was absolutely utterly terrifying. But when there's huge pressure on you, that's when you deliver, and that's when your true colours come out. So there we are.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate to visit our Chennai office and meet with some clients over the years. And it's always struck me culturally what an amazing place India and Chennai is, very different to Dublin. When you landed there with the first thought to set up a business, that must have been a daunting prospect.
Yeah. My first visit to Chennai was quite a number of years ago. I arrived at about 6:30 in the morning. And came in on a cab to the airport, from the airport to the hotel. And people were getting up, literally off the ground. And it was quite stark. And I did think, what on earth am I doing here? But it was fascinating. So I spent, for the first while I spent time, was literally in a room interviewing people and trying to get the right people. I became very undistracted by what was going on, even though it's quite a cultural experience to arrive in Chennai, especially back then. Things have changed now. It's got much more modernized and developed. And I became really focused on securing a great team of people that I could believe in and work in. And funny, I didn't really see the cultural distinctions that much. And obviously I became aware of them. And I came to embed those into my psyche of how we were going to do this. I knew what to do, to be honest. I really knew what to do. It was just about understanding the culture as much as I could and getting those people to believe in what we were trying to achieve. I think that was the key to it, though. It was really about getting a team of people in the room, giving them a vision, and getting them to believe in what we were doing, and working our way around that. Again, I was fully confident that I knew what to do, how to set it up, and how to deliver it. I thought I could do it better than most people. And I had a very good connection with certain people. We were able to do all the legal stuff and find an office. Again, that was extremely exciting. You're in a car, driving around, trying to find the right place to be, trying to find your home. It was fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. But what did you see as the kind of difference in Dainta? What was the approach that you took that you thought might differentiate yourself from a subcontinent that was, as you say, outsourcing and offshoring massive parts of the industry?
At the time, what happened with the outsourcing, I would call it a BPO approach to the work that we're doing, was very much based on breaking down the workflow and breaking down to tasks and training people specifically on those tasks, role by role. And, you know, I'm putting QC in each layer of that task. And that's how most of our competitors worked at the time. And I'd seen them operate and kind of had visited some companies and watched it. And I just decided I couldn't do that. So I took quite a risk, actually, to be honest, looking back in it now, to arrive in India. I was fairly familiar with, to be honest, though, being there for a number of years, so I understood how the basis of the culture. My belief was that the closer all of the people in the company could get to the customer, the better. And I would take a risk on training them properly and training them how to communicate and give people more access to customers, that would work. And it did. So we set up a team from the beginning who were cross-trained on a number of tasks. Key to it was understanding the concept of responsibility, which what I inherited or what I derived from being in India was responsibility tends to be passed on. And we stopped that, and it was quite brave, I think. But I suppose we tried to bring together was the best of Irish culture, global culture, and Indian culture when we set up the operation. And I think a lot of companies have failed on that when they go to different cultures. But to me, as a former sociologist, culture is really important. And I think it's the absolute essence and backbone of our company right now, despite the fact that we spend a lot of time talking about technology innovation. That's just part of our journey where we have to go to be relevant and to have an impact on the industry overall. But our backbone and our capacity to deliver and to bring people along is based on that culture. So the combination of those, I think the staff at the time really respected that because they hadn't had that experience before, certainly in our industry. And to be honest, a lot of them were challenged by it too. But I spent a long time out there myself in the early days and building up that culture and building up that belief. But I was really building up the belief of people that they could do this. It was just a matter of they were as good as anybody. And that established, at the time you asked about the difference, that was the difference right then.
I wonder if you could just be specific about that. And I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I noticed, for instance, it's not a very hierarchical team that you manage. And that's a deliberate ploy, yeah?
Yeah, I didn't like the hierarchical system at all. I felt people have to be based on merit. And a lot of the time you would get applications up in industry 8 years, in industry 10 years, didn't matter. And still to this day, we recruit people based on their instinct, based on their proactiveness, based on their organization skills, based on their insights. And overall, in the communication levels, it was certainly meant people we had to employ in the beginning to be able to manage the technology that we had, obviously get it going. But after that, we were fairly successful as well in terms of automating a reasonable amount of workflow from an early stage. So it was a matter of training the people on what we had to do. So I guess in a way, I really disliked the hierarchical structure, and I was hell bent on, I wouldn't say destroying it, but really seriously challenging it.
Yeah. And just how do you begin to manage a business 5,000 miles away?
I did travel a lot to that office, but I had to put a lot of trust and belief in the management team that I established. And I would say it wasn't straightforward, but I made some good choices. And I was very lucky that I made some good choices. Mainly the team that I began with, you know, over 10 years ago are still with us now. But I had no other choice, really, to be honest.
You're listening to the Trends in Academic Publishing podcast with me, Patrick Schaefe. My guest this week is Darren Ryan. He's the founder of the company that brings you this podcast, Dainta. I joined the company 5 years ago, by which time it also had a base in Dublin, as well as India. So what was the story behind Darren's decision to bring elements of the business back home to Ireland?
We were trying to fine-tune their skills in terms of product management and copy editing. I needed some help with that. I hadn't put the years into book copy editing and so on. So I thought, Tom, I'd turn to a previous colleague who worked for me, Michelle Van Kampen. She was working at the time as a freelance copy editor. So I encouraged her to get involved with the organization to build up that level of skills and within the organization. But ironically, that turned into Michelle helping out and working with our clients and opened up an opportunity to onshore some of that work, which was in reasonably high demand at that time. So working again with Michelle and myself, we recruited a team of onshore project managers nearly 10 years ago now. And then we built up a very large team of freelance copy editors and freelance indexing staff so that we were able to offer a high scaling capacity to manage work onshore. Obviously, all of the production was managed offshore as pricing dictates. But, you know, we became a very attractive position then because we could offer a hybrid version. And to this day, that's what we do offer. We have publications who will have some of the work carried off offshore, some of the work carried onshore. And with the same, we believe with the same standard of delivery as well.
And that office based in Dublin has become our technology center. Although there's a team in Chennai and has been for years, you've very deliberately recruited a team to be under your management in Dublin.
Yeah. In the early days when we went to develop the foundation stone of the technology that we have developed, I did instinctively look at that we need to maybe turn a different direction. And I'll be fair, we had a IT consultancy company in the UK, which helped us evaluate the type of people that we would need. And they were extremely blunt. The conclusion was that if you turn back to the technology that you were developing and the methodology you approached to that, it will not only undermine your future development of your business, it will actually undermine your entire business as you move forward if you decide to go that direction. And that you must look at what it will take to build a professional, scalable architecture that will be viable and sustainable into the future. And it was a scary remark, but they didn't hold back. And I will value that strong, blunt advice to this day. But yeah, at that point, then we believed that either way, we had to be able to develop a team here that was going to develop the user experience that was going to be necessary to build a system that everybody could access and could easily work with.
I always think that it's easier to manage somebody when you know exactly what it is they're doing and what they're supposed to be doing. But if you're bringing in front-end developers, coders, data scientists, no disrespect, but you're none of those things, how easy is it to manage them?
It wasn't. Yeah, I was stretched, absolutely stretched, nearly broken, to be honest, in every way. It was a knock because the people that were recruiting knew I didn't understand the essence of what we had to do. So I had to upskill myself as well. I had to get to understand what it was about the infrastructure, a cloud-based infrastructure. What was a pipeline? What actually does a front-end coder do? What does a back-end coder do? How do they connect up to databases? What is the latest in technology? What does Azure do? What does a DevOps person do? And now, you know, I'm not an expert, but I do have a good grip on that. It was a real challenge. I think it was one of the biggest challenges that I've had to undertake in the last 5 years.
And I'm curious because over time you have transformed from a services-based business to a solutions-based business with technology as your backbone. For a self-funded business, that's a big step. Why did you do that?
I could see how the industry was going to evolve. I could see. Also, yeah, it was a huge advance. We were relatively small as well and agile. And we built, you know, an unhierarchical structure and very quick decision-making capability. So I could see where we needed to go to be relevant in the future.
And I guess the risk in that is that with any kind of investment, any kind of point that you're trying to build something for an industry, that takes time. Is there ever been a moment where you're nervous about the fact that you might not see that return personally in your lifetime? Do you know what I mean? Because technology moves on fast. So even in the years since I've been with the business, the last 5 years, the technology is moving on. And what we're doing has always been cutting edge, but there's always a risk that you'll be eclipsed. Has that ever been a concern for you?
No. It's a bigger risk not taking the strategic direction to go the right way. Regardless of you don't get there, you get there and walk. But no, I've never worried about that. And we don't necessarily judge the output necessarily on the productivity that we get. It's about going in the right direction and holding on tight to make sure we try to get there. That is always the most important thing. And so when we set out on the new journey, which was around 2019, we sat there as a management team, looked around, looked at the version of the technology that we had worked on. I stared it in the face and thought, I don't want to see that again. So we came back and we looked at where things were going in terms of cloud-based systems were really starting to come to the fore around then. And then it completely changed how I view how we should build the whole organization, to be fairly honest. So I still have a very clear vision of where this is all going, and we're still not there. We're quite a bit away. But, you know, a very strong vision that the vendor market will not exist like it is now. I would have thought it would have been extremely different by now, but again, publishing industry does move a little bit slower than other industries. I don't think the outsourcing, the level of outsourcing will continue. I think everything will be driven by interconnections and hyperconnections between different systems. Technology, AI is transforming that, allowing that to happen. Again, AI has been part of our portfolio of thinking since 2019. Because if you're going to move to a cloud-based system, you need interactions, intelligent interactions at all points in that workflow. So there's no other way other than seamlessly communicating with publisher systems, our systems, and then delivery systems and publishing. It's simple as that.
One thing I've seen is that with all of the excitement around new technologies and AI and whatnot, that there are limitations to what the technology can do. And there's also a recognition that this industry in itself, what it tries to do with that technology, is complicated. Academic publishing is a very detailed and, quite rightly, a very precise industry. How's your experience been of that kind of understanding and then overcoming those limitations?
The limitations that the publishing industry bestows upon itself are self-imposed, I believe, and they're based on a traditional print-based approach to publishing, and which it remains quite strong to this day. You mentioned that there's limitations to technology. I don't think there's limitations to technology, to be honest. I think the doors have been opened with the latest generation of AI technologies that now we're embedding right across the workflows. I think we're only at the beginning of it. And if I'm very honest with you, actually reflected on this the other day, I think there's a whole other level that we can get to in terms of actually completely automating what we do. I always said that we would move away from a vendor market to a platform-based approach of validation by experts, and that we've certainly made a lot of ground on that in terms of some of the process that we deliver, but I think we have another level to go completely.
And do you see clients, not just our clients, but publishers in general, do you see them moving in that same direction? Do you see a demand for that, a recognition of that next level?
I just think that's completely inevitable. I think moving that direction where there's a connection between delivery of a manuscript or even the creation of that manuscript once the delivery or publishing platform is going to be completely unrecognizable in 5 to 10 years. So it's up to publishers whether they choose it or not, or whether they want to remain relevant within the industry, because the publishing industry is going to go through massive change. I think we've been looking at years ago, we would go on the book for waiting for this moment. This moment is happening right now. Like, it's, we're in the middle of it, whether we want to say it or not. And there's a whole other level to go. And that's why, you know, there's only one route of travel, really, for us, which is everybody has to be a technology company.
And so just your kind of short-term horizons, if that's kind of your long-term vision, What's next in the next 2-3 years for Dainta? What will publishers see coming from us?
We'll continue to offer the services that we offer at a very high level, and they will be supplemented by more developed technologies to support those base services that we do, which is managing publications for publishers. We're pretty good at that. I think you'll see an evolution of our hybrid offering, which connects us very well to publishers. But where I see us is becoming a technology solutions partner outside of the production aspects of publishing. So again, we're already on that journey as we're obviously working with different partners now. We're building up our resources globally as well. Now we've set up now in Brazil, development team here. We have an experienced team in Chennai in India. But I think now the structures are developing that we can really position ourselves as an ultimately solution-based company. And that's where we'll be at the forefront of whatever technology is available.
Well, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for a fascinating conversation. I was trying to get under the skin a little bit of what makes Dainta tick, and I think you've done that very well. So I appreciate you being a guest today.
Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Trends in Academic Publishing, brought to you by Dainta. I'm Patrick Schaaf, Dainta's Commercial Director, and my guest this week was our founder and CEO, Dara Ryan. All our other episodes so far aren't about us, I promise you. They're interviews with leading figures from academic publishing houses. So if this is your first episode you've ever listened to, please check them out and do follow us on whatever platform you listen to. Finally, I mentioned earlier that you can get a free copy of the annual industry report which inspired this podcast. The report is called, of course, Trends in Academic Publishing, and you can sign up for a free copy on our website, dainta.com. That's DEANTA.com. And there's a link in the show notes below. Until next time, thanks for listening. Goodbye.